Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Monday, March 18th. Today, with the ski season at full speed for spring break, Sun Outdoors reporter Jason Blevins hits on a number of topics, from snowpack to indoor skiing to skier numbers for the season. Before we begin, thanks for listening to the Daily Sunup from the Colorado Sun. Please take a moment to rate and review us in your podcast player. Tell us what you think of the show, share your ideas, and help us reach new listeners. Thank you. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1998, four Medal of Honor recipients from Pueblo returned home to cheers and accolades. William Crawford, Carl Sitter, Jerry Murphy, and Drew Dix, recognized for their valor in World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War, highlighted Pueblo's reputation as, quote, the home of heroes. This title, inspired by Congressman Scott McInnes' remarks, reflected the town's unique distinction of having had more living Medal of Honor recipients than any other community. President Dwight D. Eisenhower, upon awarding Murphy in 1953, quipped, "What is it, something in the water out there in Pueblo? All you guys turn out to be heroes." The 1998 ceremony at the Pueblo Convention Center, attended by 200 despite a snowstorm, featured a heartfelt exhibit honoring the quartet. Before we continue, do you live near Loveland and want to join our networking event? The Colorado Sun is hosting a free networking evening in partnership with the Loveland Arts Creative District and Artworks Center for Contemporary Art on March 27th. RSVP today. Space is limited. Visit coloradosun.com/events and click the Loveland event button. We hope to see you there. Now our feature story.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm David Krause, one of the editors here at the Colorado Sun, and it's another Monday Daily Sunup session with my good friend and colleague, Jason Blevins, king of the outdoors reporting scene in Colorado. Jason, how's it treating you today, buddy?
Doing well, DK. Doing well.
Hey, so figured we'd chat today. Got a lot of things happening in the past week, especially stories on our website as far as the ski industry goes, and had that big storm last week, that awesome upslope storm. Kind of crazy how it hit, you know, those March storms. We always love to see the numbers out of those. I'm in the Salida. I got probably 19 to 20 inches in my front yard over the course of 2 days, and it's been snowing through the weekend. So you're in Eagle, Jason, and you got a bluebird day while I'm watching it snow. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, I know. We did not get a lot in the Eagle River Valley. Pretty interesting to see that, how those upslope storms sort of track. Very funny.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see that, you know, the tunnel, east side, west side of the tunnel, who gets it with exactly. These storms. So figured today we got so much going on in the ski industry, we just do a little smorgasbord of ski news, as it were, Jason. We'll talk snowpack in a little bit and storms, but how about we kick off? You had the update. Vail Resorts, publicly traded company, has to post their earnings every, quarter, Jason? And you got the latest numbers. Give us a breakdown on how the winter's been going for Vail Resorts so far.
So Vail Resorts CEO Kirsten Lynch told investors last week that the incredibly challenging conditions were behind a pretty big dip in visitation to the company's 37 North American ski areas. They're down almost 10%. That is due to low snowfall, but in the East, Pacific Northwest, Central Rockies, Utah, California, 42% decline in snowfall compared to the previous winter. And that was a winter where they had posted a record 17.2 million visits. So they are down in terms of visits. But one of the interesting trends we're seeing in skiing in the past 5-10 years is that visits are no longer an accurate barometer of the health of the ski industry. It wasn't that long ago that when visits were down, resorts were tightening belts and, you know, getting ready for a hard, lean season. That is not the case anymore. When Vail Resorts sells 2.4 million of its epic season passes and epic day passes, earnings for the company, despite the downturn in visitation are up. And that is part of the company's kind of overarching strategy to sell 75% of its lift ticket revenue through passes, early advance purchases. 2.4 million skiers lined up to buy lift tickets and season passes well before winter. And that is part of the stability that Vail Resorts' financial strategy has delivered to the industry. Like I said, when snow was lean and visits dropped, resort operators, you know, buckled up for a rough year. That is no longer the case. And while they had a very, Vail Resorts had a very robust kind of early November, December, January in terms of earnings, there's hope that visitation will rebound with all the new snow that's kind of blanketed the West in the past month or so, past few weeks. So hopefully they can get it. And there's a surprisingly high number. Kirsten Lynch was saying, the CEO, telling investors, surprising number of skiers have not used their Epic Pass products yet. So that would indicate that there's going to be a sort of an uptick in visitation and plans for growth, you know, stronger revenues. But still, they did sort of dial back their earnings projection for the entire season. While earnings are up, they're not up as much as the company was hoping it would be able to share with investors. So they kind of dialed back a little bit their projections for the financial year, which ends July. But it's interesting to watch, you know, having sort of watched skiing for 25 years, 30 years and covered it as a business. It's pretty interesting to see the business no longer so reliant on snow. You know, they'll have a pretty bad start to snow season, big decline in visitation, and it just doesn't really translate to the bottom line as acutely as it once did. So again, that reflects the sort of health of the industry and the Vail Resorts. I think they said they have $1.4 billion accessible to them in a mix of cash and on loan availability. So, you know, they got a bunch of money and, you know, tons coming in and pretty robust margins. So it's a pretty interesting time to be watching this ski industry really thrive right now.
And Jason, just to remind people, Vail is public, but Alterra, their main rival or competitor, I guess, in this space, owners of the Icon Pass, they're privately held, so we don't see their earning numbers as much, or we don't see those, right, Jason? But any indication there on what's going on some of those mountains?
Man, it's hard to tell. But, I mean, I know that Alterra is doing very well, you know, but it's impossible to quantify and really come up with numbers just because that company is privately held. But like we said, they did just come up with a new financial loan program vehicle that what they call it, an investment vehicle, that raised $3 billion. Most of that money is going to pay back the initial investors who launched Alterra. Mm-hmm. But you know, just the fact that they could go out and raise that level of money again shows the strength and vibrancy of the industry and the two companies that are there. Again, it's really difficult to quantify how well Alterra is doing, but they're doing well. Hard to say exactly what put numbers.
Yeah, you got to think if Vail Resorts is doing well, Alterra is alternatively probably doing medium or well, just because that's an indication of the overall industry, right?
Yeah, exactly. And both companies, important to note that they have launched their sales for the Alterra's Icon Pass and Vail Resorts Epic Pass. They launched a little over a week ago, so they will start selling those, buying those right now. And this is obviously a big chance for them to raise money in the springtime and, you know, carry it through summer. So again, that's sort of the whole new trend is selling these passes. We're not even done with the, you know, with the 23-24 season, and they're selling passes for 24-25.
All right, well, let's get on to the big thing for those of us who get up on the hill, as well as talking about spring and summer. some snowpack numbers, getting a good boost out of this storm last week. Jason, was it last month? Our water reporter, Shin and Mullane, is going to join us on tomorrow's episode to talk Colorado River. But back in February, she reported snowpack finally got a little bit of a bump. Was up to 96% statewide. You checked the numbers over the weekend, Jason. Where are we at as far as how's snowpack looking, which translates to runoff and how long the rafting season goes? But what do you see there?
Yeah, we are over 100, 105%. That upslope storm there on the Front Range that everybody knows about really did a splendid job of bolstering the South Platte drainage. As you know, Colorado groups its snowpack studies into river drainages, and there's what, 1, 2, 3, 7, 8 different drainages that they quantify, and all of them are I guess in Rio Grande, Upper Rio Grande, down San Luis Valley's at 97, San Miguel, Dolores, Animas, San Juan down there southwest is at 99, but Arkansas, your hood is 108, Gunny's 103. Colorado Headwaters, my hood, 108. Up north, Steamboat at the Yampa and White River there, 113. Looking really good. But again, South Platte's pulling ahead with that upslope storm. That pretty heavy snow, from what I understand, out there on the Front Range out of that last pounding last week.
Yeah, that was interesting. I always like to see those, you know, where it hits between South Park and North Park, right? And is it going to be evergreen this time, or is it going to be, you know, Nederlin got hammered, Aspen Park up there got hammered, even down, you know, on Bailey over Kenosha has been closed down and off last week. So that's when you know it's getting hammered, but kind of good to see. And like I said, we'll talk about it probably a little bit more tomorrow, but really good to see kind of gets that reinvigorates people, I think, along the Front Range when you get a good March storm to think about spring break, right? Which probably should see some big numbers coming up.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, with these passes, you see a lot of people kind of waiting for really good snow conditions. And that certainly helps to get some business in the ski towns.
All right. So you can't make it up to the mountain. We had a story this week about one of these new indoor places, really great for beginners, called Snowmon. Jason, you've been to one of them. Now there's two of them in the metro area. It's kind of an inclined carpet moving treadmill for skiing, as it were. Jason, kind of give people an idea of what that place is like since you've been there.
Yeah, it's a tilted, imagine an escalator with a sort of a moving carpet that can move under your skis, and you get to really, you know, get that foundational ski movement. You know, pretty easy to pick up just edge to edge concepts and beginner type concepts. I went out to one in an indoor ski facility in New Jersey, the old Meadowlands, right there at the giant, what is it, Big America Mall. And they use actual snow, which is pretty fun. And that facility out in New Jersey is commonly heralded as one of the keys to kind of growing new skiers, you know, grooming the new skiers, getting them ready so that maybe they don't have to go through all the trials and tribulations of learning how to ski. And that's sort of the idea behind the Snowmon facilities. There's one in Centennial, there's one in Thornton, and these things are, you know, they can train 10,000 plus skiers a year with these carpets and get kids in there. And the whole idea is that you can maybe, you know, seed the next generation of skiers. And that is something that has been challenging the industry for more than two decades now. Since 2000, there's big effort to convert 25% of the skiers who take a ski lesson and get them into, you know, sort of the lifelong skier status, the pass buyers, you know, the folks who will, you know, continue skiing for the rest of their days. That has not really worked too well. The industry's kind of struggled to really move it. It's been around 15, 16, 17% for years and years. And it's been a challenge trying to figure out how to get newcomers into the sport. And again, with the passes that we were just talking about, it's hard to get a newcomer, you know, tell a newcomer, hey, you should start skiing. It's, you know, it's only $1,000 for a season pass, and they've never done it. Like, that's difficult. And part of the strategy with the big operators there is to charge an exorbitant amount for the day lift tickets, $299, as we saw in Parker's story on the cost of skiing this week as well. You know, it's just, there's a struggle, and with this new business plan with the industry to, you know, really get people to buy season passes, but that's a challenge when you've never done it before. Maybe you're not going to go buy a season pass before you even tried it. So that's where these sort of indoor facilities and this Snowbond facility there in Thornton and Centennial can maybe help you get a lesson. You get skiing, you get all the gear for $50-$60, you know, and that can kind of give you, you know, get your legs under you, and maybe you can have a little more fun on that first day at a resort. So that's kind of the hope. We had a freelancer, Chloe Anderson, go out there to the grand opening there in Thornton, and she took some amazing photos and pretty cool story. And, you know, the promise of these kind of indoor training facilities, I like to think of, you know, what climbing gyms have done for climbing. You know, we got a climbing gym here in Eagle, and the place is crowded all the time. And what, you know, we got these little river parks all over Colorado where people go and surf. You know, it's like this park and play concept that you can kind of, you know, develop and hone skills that you can use in the outdoors without necessarily, you know, a big drive and a long trip and a long weekend or things like that. You can kind of just, you know, piecemeal some skills together and maybe improve your time when you are in the great outdoors.
Yeah, kind of the same with that place up in Windsor, up at Pelican Lakes, the Tubing Hill, and then the, you know, green runs. It kind of reminds me of, you know, skiing in Nebraska or, you know, Iowa, some of those places. There's a place used to be north of Omaha. That's where I learned to ski. And then there used to be a place in between Lincoln and Omaha, a little ski hill up there. So it's kind of that mentality, right? Get people comfortable but not intimidated for that first couple of times, and maybe we'll keep them and get them into the system a little bit better.
Yeah, exactly. That's the hope.
Yeah, and I love that analogy with the climbing walls, right? I wouldn't have thought about that, but the way climbing has just taken off, everywhere has climbing walls now in every state and, you know, old silos. It's amazing what that has done for the sport of climbing.
And it's fun because now when I go out and, you know, take a trip and go to a real crag, I'm more confident and I have some skills, you know. I can jump right into maybe some harder stuff instead of, you know, just poking around on the bunny hill 5.7s, you know. It's like it just hones your skills, strengthens your hands and all your arms, you know. And so I feel like, you know, there's a lot of comparisons in this growth of, you know, climate gyms and park and play whitewater parks and indoor skiing now. Here we go.
Yeah. Hey, we're going long, but let's just give a plug and a quick thought out. I know you read it. A good friend of mine, Andrew Travers, I worked with him over in Aspen, my time at the Aspen Times. Great guy, incredible writer. Got a really good insight, kind of talk about Spider Savage. A lot of people might not, especially the younger generation, don't know him. But an incredible skier, U.S. downhiller in the 60s and 70s, was killed by his girlfriend in Aspen. So certainly a torrid Aspen tale. Jason, you know, downhill racer. I remember watching that movie. I've probably seen that thing 4 or 5 times, just watching Redford try to be a downhill racer. Really great insight in Andrew's story. Did you learn anything, or what did you like about that Spider Savage kind of piece?
Well, I like Amy Redford, the daughter of Robert Redford. She recognizes that Spider Savage was, you know, he was incredible, you know, cultural icon and one of the first sort of superstars of downhill skiing in the United States. You know, sort of set the ground there. He was really charismatic, handsome devil, Aspen guy, you know, just charming guy. And sadly, his untimely death at the hand of his girlfriend there sort of, so people remember, right? That's all they think about is, oh, yeah, he was shot by his girlfriend and she didn't go to jail. You know, and I think Amy Redford recognizing that you know, there's more to tell there. And there's the life and times of Spider Savage and, you know, his growing up and, you know, and how he rags to riches and, you know, sort of came to the top tier of American ski racing, you know, through CU Boulder there and the US ski team and Winter Olympics. And yeah, so I think, you know, I was really excited to read Andrew's story and kind of just know that there's something more to come on Spider Savage instead of this, you know, sort of sordid tale of, you know, scorned woman and movie starlet.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see that. It was cool to see Andrew given that, having that for us in the Colorado Sun.
Yeah, it was a good exclusive for him. He's so well connected in that Aspen scene, especially when it comes to entertainment and things like that. She did, Claudette, just for the record, she did serve 30 days in jail at the Pitkin County Jail. But if I recall correctly from Andrew's story, she only had to go on the weekends.
Yeah, she only had to go on the weekends. Ended up marrying her defense attorney, too.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that we looked it up. Her house is for sale. Beautiful spot. $35 million? Is that the tag on it? 5 acres. You're buying it for the land and the view because it's opposite of Aspen Mountain. Yeah, it's off of Red Mountain or Red Road. But yeah, just so many interesting layers to that onion, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta love those inside Aspen journalists when they turn a story. It's always raises eyebrows. I like that stuff.
Yeah. Hey, I know we went a little long, so I appreciate everybody sticking with us, but always have fun time talk about skiing and outdoor sports, that's for sure. If you haven't already, you can certainly find these stories and all of our incredible Colorado outdoors news. Check it out on our homepage, coloradosun.com. And up at the top, we've got a outdoors tab. Every story is listed in there and get settled in and read all those. If you haven't, you can also sign up for Jason's weekly newsletter at coloradosun.com/outsider. Comes out every Thursday, gives you a little insight on what's coming up. Colorado Sun, as I want to remind people, is a member of the Trust Project. So you can check out our commitment to trusted journalism at coloradosun.com/ethics. Jason Blevins, I know both you and I are recovering from injuries. Haven't been able to enjoy this sweet powder, but hey, try to make it a great day, bud.
Yeah, thanks, CK.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado is a national hub for eating disorder treatment, but the state does not regulate the treatment plans or clinical practices of centers that do the work. The clinics are regulated only by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, which performs safety inspections and investigates complaints. Legislation from state senators Lisa Cutter and Faith Winter, both Democrats, would put the clinics under the purview of the State Behavioral Health Administration, which oversees mental health hospitals. A huge point of controversy in this year's proposal is whether eating disorder treatment facilities should be allowed to force patients to eat certain foods. Jackknifed and spun-out trucks contributed to the closure of Interstate 70 during last week's snowstorm. Now, the Colorado State Patrol said troopers issued 12 citations to commercial truckers who didn't follow the chain laws. The road was completely shut down for a while Thursday and closed to commercial trucks into Friday morning. During the winter, truckers are required to carry chains on the I-70 mountain stretch between Denver and west of Vail. Fines range from $100 to $1,000. One of the country's largest gas stations is up and pumping in Colorado after the Texas-based Buc-ee's opened a 74,700-square-foot store off I-25 between Denver and Fort Collins. Today marks the opening of Buc-ee's first Colorado location and the company's largest store, for now. Later this year, the chain is opening a 75,000-square-foot store in its home state. Beyond the 116 gas pumps, the Johnstown store is promoted as a family travel center that has something for every person in your vehicle. Check out more in this week's Colorado Sunday feature at coloradosun.com. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
I'm Lauren Wynott, Director of Membership at the Colorado Sun. I came to work at the Sun because quality, trustworthy journalism is important. As a reader and listener, I find the Sun to be a breath of fresh air. The journalists tell Colorado stories that keep me informed, entertained, and engaged. If you also trust the Sun for your news, join me as a member at coloradosun.com/join. Your support helps to bring you and other Coloradans the news you deserve. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you.